What's up, Fanatics? It's time for another edition of the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast. We don't really have a name for this one, so I'm going to call it the Encyclopedia Basketball Tip-Off Hour. I'm joined by the Encyclopedia, Kirk Holland.
Yeah, you know, I guess I started that name. Is just I thought it was like a clever name for a website.
Yeah.
And then people like start referring to me as that. I'm like, no, I'm not that smart, guys. like I don't know all this stuff. It's not up in my head. I swear, I'm not like crazy. So, but yeah, it's okay.
You're pretty much I would say that you might as well just go by that, though.
Well, you know, it's
your brand.
It's meant as a compliment, and it might be my brand that is extremely small, but, you know, I just roll with it usually.
We are here to talk about basketball because Iowa State's basketball season kind of unofficially gets underway on Friday night against Grand Valley State. I don't know if I've ever been more excited for a basketball season. I don't know about you.
Yeah, it's up there. I mean, last year everyone was excited for basketball too, and there's bigger question marks going into last year with you lose DeAndre Kane, you lose Melvin Edgem, and this year you have your three best players from last year's team back. So excitement is crazy. I think probably the one I could compare it to, you might have been like two at the time, was when Willoughby and all those guys came back for their senior year. I mean, that the year when their 95-96 season. There was nobody returning. It was J.C. Holloway, who never scored. Mm-hmm. And then they all came in as junior college kids. And I think that next year, I mean, everybody was back. It was crazy. They started, I think, ranked like number 9 in the country or something like that. Got up to 4. But, yeah, the excitement's off the charts. It's awesome.
And, I mean, obviously the big thing is going to be how Iowa State adjusts in year one under Steve Prohm taking over for Fred Hoiberg. What I don't think a lot of people really expect to see much of a huge difference from the team in the way they play or anything like that. I mean, what do you think?
No, yeah, I agree. I think, you know, offensively, I'm expecting things to be schematically basically the same, mm-hmm. At least with, like, their standard offense they run. He's going to have his own sets. He's going to use sets differently. He's going to have to identify things in the same way that, like, Hoiberg would with knowing where to attack. I mean, look back at the Oklahoma game at home last year. When you have a first half like that, is Steve Prohm going to make that kind of an adjustment? Will he be that crazy about it? I mean, Hoiberg was never worried. His ego that. So offensively, I think it'll mostly be the same. My question is usually, Hoiberg's big thing when he got here was instilling confidence, playing with freedom. And as a former player and coach, and you've played and probably coached in some regard before, mm-hmm. when Hoiberg was up there in his first press conference talking about not yanking guys for taking bad shots, you're thinking, this is never going to work. Like, no way will that ever work. But it did, and he would eventually get guys funneled into taking the right shots. Prohm has talked about that a little bit in press conferences with letting them play with freedom, some freedom, you know. Like, he'll. It sounds like he might have a shorter leash with that, but that'll be interesting to see how, you know, if Matt Thomas is struggling for the first 5 games, how will he handle him versus how Hoiberg would have handled him. But in the end, I mean, that isn't to say that Hoiberg's way was the best way.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see how that turns out. On defense, from what I've heard, I mean, I'm like a regular Joe. I don't have the insider info. I don't go to press conferences and talk to these guys. But it's been alluded to they want to play a more pressure-based defense.
Right.
Which is interesting. If they have as short of bench as it seems like they might, you wonder if they can keep that up, if they have the right guys to do it, and how in general. I think if you play a pressure-based defense against an inferior team, you're less likely to let them hang around,
right?
Because you're not just relying on them to miss shots. I mean, Hoiberg a lot of times basically played a prevent, so that'll be interesting too. But yeah, excited.
I just think it'll be interesting if they go to more of a pressure defensive style like that. It's going to be hard for them to match up sometimes.
Yeah,
I think, especially with George. I mean, he's not the biggest 4 in the Big 12. I think there's going to be some guys that, you know, might be able to bully him a little bit.
Right.
But I think that on the wings, that's the other spot that I know Hit Prohm talked about. He wants to deny the ball to the wings a lot more. And I think that could be something that is pretty big for them, because if they're able to keep the ball in the middle of the floor more and funnel the ball – just more into the middle, all straight towards McKay.
Right.
That, I mean, I think you've just got a lot better defensive coverage if you're able to keep the ball in the middle of the floor, deny those wings. But it comes down to how they're going to be able to execute it too. Because if you're getting beat, you know, time and time again on a back cut or something like that because you're overplaying on the wing, then it all just kind
of – Yeah, and I think the conundrum of it is with the lineup. I mean, 90% of the time, George Niang is going to be playing and Jameel McKay is going to be playing.
Yeah.
George is a little bit of a defensive liability just in his – what he can physically do.
Mm-hmm.
But he tries really, really hard, so I always give – almost always give him a pass. I mean, he can guard a guy in the block a lot better than he can guard a guy in the wing. So in theory, if you're going to play a pressure defense, and almost anyone plays four out, one in anymore. I mean, you don't have two post defenders. You'd be better off having him in the paint. But if you're going to do that, then your pressure defense loses its muster a little bit because you want McKay sitting in the middle to block shots. But McKay is the type that he could guard. I mean, he could guard 6-5 guys on the wing in a lot of cases. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that the one thing that I really want to know how they're going to be able to handle is how are they going to replace Dustin Hogue? I mean, who are going to be the guys that are the – besides McKay, are getting the rebounds for his team?
Right.
You know, George is going to work hard on the boards, but like you said, just athletically, what he can actually physically do is actually limited because he's just not a freak athlete like that, you know?
Yeah, and they've talked a lot about his having a renewed focus on rebounding, and that's fine. Like, I would think everyone should focus on that, but – and I've said it 1,000 times, and it's probably because I relate from personal experience of being the big guy that wasn't athletic enough to go get rebounds. If George Niang is guarding a Ryan Spangler, George's job isn't really get the rebound.
Just keep his
George's job is to keep Ryan Spangler from getting the rebound and trusting the rest of it, because he has the toughest assignment. If he controls him, those other guys will be winning their battles and getting rebounds. So, I mean – yeah, the question still stands, though, who will fill in for Dustin Hogue? But I guess last year, too, I'd have to go back and look. Early on, everyone's like, oh, man, Dustin Hogue forgot how to rebound.
Right.
You know, his where'd he go? So it's always kind of a by committee thing and see who happens to be grabbing all of them. But I think there'll be chances for everybody to get in there and get after him.
It seems hard to believe that only one guy grabbed 94 rebounds on the whole team, and that was McKay.
Yeah, that's... that's not very many, especially when you consider pace of play and all that, right? Like,
right.
When you're having over 75 possessions a game or the other team is making far too many shots.
But, like we said with the rebounding by committee, you know, George averaged 5.3, 4.8 for DeJon Jones, 4.9 for Hogue. So it's like – and then McKay had 7.5. So, yeah, nobody's grabbing 11 rebounds. Nobody's going to get a double-double. They're not going to average anything like that.
Right.
But you're going to have – all six guys potentially that are on the floor are going to be able to grab 3 to 4 rebounds every single night.
Yeah, and I think that's the big thing is always getting help from your guards. I mean, guys like Matt Thomas, Naz, they'll both get in there and get after rebounds. They're not huge guys or huge rebounders, but they'll be able to chip in and help out. It's funny you mentioned the double-double thing. I've been meaning to tweet it for like 2 weeks now, but like you get into this time of the year every year and you look on message boards and people start like projecting – how many rebounds can this guy have? And
yeah.
Like, who can average a double-double? Like, here's the thing. No one at Iowa State has averaged a double-double in, like, 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was Dean Utoff in the 70s. So, who's going to average a double-double? Well, if anyone, it'd be McKay, but...
did anyone in college basketball even?
I haven't even looked. I don't know. There's probably some small school guys. There's a guy that Ken Pomeroy loves. I can't think of his name, though. Williams. Something Williams. But yeah, I mean... It just doesn't happen very often anymore, especially at Iowa State.
Yeah, definitely. Looking around the rest of the Big 12, obviously, like, the big story is who's going to be able to beat Texas.
But when you say
not
Texas,
I mean Kansas.
Iowa State football will beat Texas, that's who, right?
Yeah. I'm on – I don't know. Yeah, Kansas, 11 straight Big 12 championships. Is this going to be the year?
Well, I mean – at some point, right? Like, they can't win every year.
Right.
And there's been some shared ones in there, and there's been some years where it's been, like, razor-thin close when it doesn't even seem like – like, the one I look back on more than any year is 2013,
mm-hmm.
where Iowa State more or less gave them 2 games, more or less. And they finished tied with Kansas State at 14-4 in the league. I mean – and that was the year when Iowa State was 11-7. They blew another game or two. I mean,
yeah.
Not only could Iowa State have won the Big 12 outright, But Kansas definitely could easily have lost it that year. So will this be the year? Who knows? I mean, I think Kansas is relying a lot on Wayne Selden and Frank Mason, and they're looking at how they did in that World University Games tournament and thinking everything will be pretty good, but we'll have to see. I mean, Selden has just been so hit and miss.
Yeah.
And Perry Ellis is a good player, and it's funny how similar that him and George are, but I think George is a little bit more of a nonstop offensive kind of dynamic threat.
I just think it's interesting the way people's opinions differ on this team based on whether or not Diallo is eligible.
Right.
But I'll be honest. I mean, yeah, he's going to be a good player, but I don't see a guy that's like – I don't see like an Anthony Davis type talent that's
no.
the difference between winning the national championship and not winning the national championship.
Yeah, and this happens every year. And, I mean, lots of times it's wrong. I mean,
yeah.
I can't even think of the kid's name from Kansas last year that was basically in the doghouse.
Oh,
by
Cliff Alexander.
Yeah, he was in the doghouse by the middle of January and basically never played after that. I mean, whether it was on him or self not – liking
well,
him or however
NCAA stuff too.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, there's big time recruits every year that don't come in and start and make huge impacts. And there's guys like George Niang that, I mean, when he was recruited and Monte Morris, when he was recruited, everyone's like, oh yeah, that's a nice pickup for Iowa State. But
right.
who would have seen their freshman seasons, you know? So that makes it even tougher to predict.
Right. And like I said, I just don't see a guy that's like – I've seen people have them ranked anywhere from, you know, 7 or 8 all the way up to number 1, and it really all hinges on this one guy that is a true freshman that hasn't played a single game of college basketball.
Yeah.
Is not even eligible yet, but
– I think if Kansas is going to have a really good year like they typically do, it will be more on the returning guys. I mean, Perry – Frank Mason, Wayne Selden will have to figure things out and be consistent. But even like the reserve big guy, like a Jamari Traylor, and then Brandon Green, I think he had a similar hip surgery to Naz and Hollis Cook. So I don't know how he's coming back, but they're going to be very perimeter oriented plus Perry. The last couple of years, other than when they had Embiid, they haven't been the Kansas of old, like.
Mm-mm.
I mean, I grew up with Kansas having like 3 or 4 post guys that were all bigger than our biggest guy, and they're just relentless. So it hasn't been like that for a little while, and I think, again, they're going to be perimeter-oriented. And last year they were a decent three-point shooting team, but they'd go up and down, and they'd get cold spots, and they just couldn't do it.
Besides Iowa State, who do you see as the number one contender to beat Kansas, obviously, or probably Oklahoma?
Yeah, it's obviously Oklahoma. They have Buddy Hield back, and am I crazy, or did they lose Cousins or Woodard? Did one of them like transfer out? I was trying to find that out the other day, and I
Cousins is still on.
Cousins
the
is still there.
They're both still on.
Okay,
the
they might both still be there, but I mean, so they have Buddy Hield, and they have Cousins and Woodard, who are both pretty good. Frank Booker, I think, is the one that left. That guy was kind of a goofy guy.
Oh yeah,
and they have Spangler back. But, so they have some really good players. Their backcourt guys are decent. Heald's really good. Spangler is good at what he does. But they have to replace Tayshaun Thomas. Like, that's a big deal because he was their only guy that could score inside last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I know they have a couple of young guys, that Latin kid. There's probably some transfers and recruits that they're high on and hoping they can fill that void. But someone's going to have to fill it. And whether they do or not, I don't know. But, yeah, it's – Kansas, to me, Kansas, Oklahoma, and Iowa State are all on the same plane.
They did get a 7-foot junior college transfer from Indian Hills.
Which one was that? Never mind.
I don't know how to say this name. Yeah, I'm not even.
No one cares.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, there you go. That could be their guy.
If they have some, they'll need someone that can score, and it's not even a. Like, defensively, they'll be fine. Last year, their defense was awesome. I never really figured out how they were as good as they were, necessarily. But, yeah, if they can, they need someone that can score inside. Otherwise, they'll be relying on Hield way too much.
I think the other one that is kind of a question mark but could be a team that could compete like that is Texas.
Yeah, I have no idea what to think of Texas. I mean, obviously, they have Shaka Smart. And they have tons of dudes back from last year, I think.
I don't know why, but I completely blanked on Shaka Smart being Texas's head coach until I got to media day and he was there. And I was like, oh, my God.
Where'd Rick Barnes go?
Shaka Smart coaches Texas. I forgot this.
I was flipping through the NBA games the other night and I landed on the Thunder game. And I was like, oh, my God, Billy Donovan is coaching Oklahoma City. What? When did this happen? I completely forgot. But, yeah, Texas, I mean, obviously it starts with Isaiah Taylor. I don't know if it's interesting, but I wonder how Cameron Ridley, how he's going to play into – I mean, they score. He's not going to be involved with the press. He's just going to go stand under his own rim, right? But I wonder how he can keep up with that kind of pace. And they've got a bunch of skilled athletic guards and another 6'10 white kid that makes three still with Lammert. I don't know. I don't know if I'm the only one, but I saw people – I think Texas was fourth in that coaches poll for the Big 12. And my immediate thought, I think Baylor, if I was picking right now, I would put Baylor ahead of Texas.
Yeah.
And most of that is probably directly related to, I think Taurean Prince is really, really good. I don't know if he'll keep it up, but he's basically, like, the way he was playing last year, he was better than Will Clyburn was with the year he was at Iowa State.
Yeah.
He was a better three-point shooter. I mean, Clyburn shot the ball really well when he was at Utah, but that never really came to fruition in Ames. He would go in spots, but Taurean Prince is really, really good. And they have some other young big guys. Enrico Gathers is obviously back again. And I think their only real known guard that's done much is Lester Medford, which is a really weird name for someone under the age of 75. But, you know, just based off of what Taurean Prince can do, the history recently of Baylor having a bunch of athletic guys that are a pain in the butt, and Rico Gathers.
Yeah.
I would probably put Baylor ahead of Texas. But, I mean, the good news is we get to play a full round robin and figure it out.
Lester Medford went to Indian Hills, too.
Every junior college kid that goes on to any success somehow went to Indian Hills. It's bananas.
Yeah, he went to two junior colleges. One of them was Indian Hills. So, but, yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, Baylor is one of those teams that's like every single year you can't expect them to be like the top team. You can't expect them to be there. But you know at the end of the day when it gets to be the second to last week in February, they're going to be right there.
Well, and like it's just kind of popping into my head. Maybe we need to go back and look at it. But like is Scott Drew and Baylor, are they like Kirk Ferentz in Iowa? Like years where they're expected to do well, they kind of bomb. And years where they're expected to be like ho-hum, they kind of – come out of nowhere and finish top three, top four in a really tough league. I mean, this year they're kind of middling expectations.
I guess I can't remember the last time they were expected to be really good.
Yeah, you'd have to go back a few years maybe. They have so many guys that just come in and out of their system. Probably the last time they're expected to be really good, they were top 10 during the Royce White year when we beat them at home. When they had like
11-12.
Yeah.
They went 30-8 that year, so I can't...
Yeah, that's not really bombing by any means. So, no. Yeah, that's true. But yeah, Baylor, I guess it goes back to our good buddy, or I don't know, is it Bloom or Williams that coined the Baylor is Baylor is Baylor, where...
I don't know, I'm
sure... It's not meant as a slight, you just never...
Right.
You never know what you're going to get from them.
Scott Drew is such a character, though. I love it.
Chris is... I think Chris told a story on a podcast or something where he was at coaches the media conference one year, and he was just sitting there working and doing something on his phone, and Scott Drew just pulls up a chair and sits down next to him.
Yeah.
Are you getting any cell service in here? This is terrible.
Yeah.
Like he sounds like a goofball.
He is a goofy guy, but does sound like something exactly like he would do, and that is his voice perfectly.
And I didn't even know that.
His voice makes like just absolutely makes the.
Well, and like I'm inclined to not like him because like allegedly nobody in the league likes him, right? Like he's a dirty recruiter or whatever. But like just from the year when we made the Sweet 16 two years ago, when they were at the same site and he was all pumped up and cheering for Iowa State, like that kind of. Gives him a soft spot in my heart, at least.
Fun fact for you, Serge Ibaka's brother now plays for Oklahoma State.
Well, that's not fair.
Igor Ibaka.
They could probably just switch places and nobody would know. Yeah, Oklahoma State.
That's another one.
Someone figure them out. So
they've got Phil Forte back.
Which he basically just blends in with the Keaton Page era, right? Like, it seems like it was this one dude that
just
lost a little bit of weight a few years ago.
He's only been playing for Oklahoma State now for 7 seasons, but.
Yeah, at least LeBrian Nash finally left. That dude was there for 7 seasons. Yeah, I don't. Oklahoma State, I don't know.
I don't know. I don't even really recognize many of these names.
Newberry was, I mean, not good. He was, like, moderately serviceable. Tavarius Shine was same. Leighton Hammond, same. Like, they don't have, I don't know if, and I don't know their recruiting class.
No.
And I don't know what they have that's new well enough yet because the season hasn't started. I don't get to watch, but.
Well,
they don't have a guy. Like, no. Phil Forte, the dude can make shots from everywhere that are tightly contested, but he can't be the guy. He's not good enough.
He averaged 15 points last year, and then do they have Anthony Hickey back? No.
No, he's gone.
They don't have Michael Cobbins back.
Yeah, they don't have – they lost the heart and soul of their – everyone other than Forte of their not-so-great season.
Yeah, and then Newberry was their next leading scorer at 6.7.
Yeah, so. their new guys are going to have to go nuts. The other one that – I guess to do big picture first and before we go through every team. Like Kansas State, I'm pretty sure, is going to be terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Texas Tech, I'm guessing, is going to be slightly better.
TCU, I actually think TCU has a potential to be much improved.
Yeah, I think they will be, but they had some really good players last year, but they lose their 2 best players,
right.
Kian Anderson and Trey Ziegler.
Right.
I mean, they were – and they lose Amrick Fields. Crap.
Maybe not anymore.
They still have some good young talent, like Kavarius right. Shepherd, the Washburn kid, apparently Kenrich Williams, who I forgot about. I think they'll be considerably better than Kansas State, and Texas Tech, but it'll be kind of them and Oklahoma State on that next plane. Although I wouldn't be surprised Oklahoma State dropped down to that bottom tier.
I loved what Trent Johnson said at media day. Someone said, Trent, your team is filled with shooters and scorers this year. What's it take to manage? Something like that, and he's like, shooters and scorers? I don't know about that.
Do you realize, like, I'm the TCU coach? Like, what? I guess we have to have somebody shoot, yeah, but, yeah, that's crazy. Well, and then West Virginia, to me, is like, if I had to guess right now, I would put them probably behind Baylor and Texas, maybe somewhere in the mix there.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't... They lose Staten, which is obviously a problem. I don't know how sustainable that style of play is. And I think they had a good tournament last year. I don't know, they make Sweet 16? They'd make Sweet 16.
Yeah.
They lost to Kentucky. They lost bad. No, 78-39 to Kentucky. It's just one of those things where it's just when you play really good teams, they don't usually succumb to the turnover thing in a neutral environment or at home. And I think it's hard to rely on that. And when you lose Staten, you're kind of the guy that makes everything happen. It's going to be a problem. But Devin Williams is an absolute load and pain in the butt. And then they have a bunch of other athletic kids, and I'm sure they're adding some younger talent. So they'll be interesting. But I would say they're probably somewhere in the mix with Texas, just below behind Baylor, but that's just my opinion on the first day of November before seeing anything in 6 months.
Right. They play a really, really, really bad non-conference schedule.
Do they?
Northern Kentucky, James Madison, Stetson, Bethune-Cookman, Richmond, Cal/San Diego State, so that'll be a good game, either one of those teams.
Hey, they play Virginia.
Okay, Virginia.
That'll be a fun game to watch.
Kennesaw State.
Yeah, they're bad.
UL Monroe.
Pretty
Marshall.
So they play like 2 teams with a pulse.
Yeah.
In non-conference, maybe. Virginia and...
Well, I guess that's not much more than Iowa State either, but...
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, UNI is always going to be a problem.
Yeah.
I mean, Iowa, it's a Big Ten school, so right away that's better than anything West Virginia has.
Yeah.
Colorado, they're
okay.
Not
I'm
great.
Wrong. I was wrong. I'll admit I was wrong.
You didn't even let me bring up Cincinnati
or Virginia Tech or Illinois or slash UAB
yeah.
or
UAB Ted Flint. Jeez. Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think it'll be a good year for the league. I don't know. And this is still the Iowa State fan in me, and it's the same problem I had last year. I know that Iowa State is on the top tier, and everyone would agree probably nationally with Oklahoma and Kansas, so those guys are probably national title contenders. Mm-hmm. It is just so strange to think about that Iowa State is a legitimate national title contender.
And not even like – it's like a preseason consensus bona fide thing.
Yeah.
You know?
It's usually like we're used to like reeling off like 15 wins in a row and starting to
then
get votes.
You get
and,
yeah.
you know, and then people like maybe start talking about it. And yeah, it's still just a weird world. And I guess it gets even weirder with trying to figure out how that transition
right.
goes from Hoiberg to Prohm and how everyone picks that up. So,
well, we were talking, I know I asked you one day, we were trying to figure out when the last time there was a preseason All-American. First
yeah.
team All-American consensus.
I don't think there has been. I mean, I noticed it last year when George was he second or third team AP All-American last year?
Yeah, I think so.
I think third. And he's the first guy for Iowa State that's been first, second, or third team AP All-American and then come back the next year. So usually that happens and guys are out the door. Like the only one that would even been a chance would have been Tinsley because he came back after he had a really good his first year as a junior. But from what I could tell, he was not. I mean, but it's not just that. I mean, you have Niang who is on everyone's top these first or second team list.
Right.
And then you have McKay who I don't mean to sound bad, but I wonder sometimes if he's maybe a little overblown. Little.
Who?
McKay.
Oh.
And I think most of that is probably back to there weren't many times last year where he was given the chance to create his own shot. Mm-hmm. There were stretches where he would make pretty sophisticated post moves and score, and he'd look great. I mean, defensively and athletically, like, he's awesome. Offensively, he's really good when everyone sets him up. And no slight to him, I mean, that's all he has to be. He's
right.
He's like Melvin Edgem as a freshman or whatever with Royce White. He's a sophomore, I guess. But Edgem didn't have to do all the dirty work. Royce White went and got him shots, and, you know, that's great. So, I mean, but it's just crazy that you have a guy like McKay, a guy like Niang, and then I guess Monte Morris is okay what he does too. So,
I think McKay's actually going to surprise some people because I've been high on his ability to play with his back to the basket. Ever since he got to Iowa State, I feel like he's going to surprise some people in some situations where they just let him go to work down there.
Did you spend a lot of time scouting Indian Hills?
No, well, I actually
– because I know –
yeah.
I mean
– I'm a big junior college basketball
right,
guy.
Right,
but I – Indian Hills is one of the programs that I follow a little closer.
Uh-huh.
But
– and, I mean, they always have so much talent. Like,
yeah.
D1 talent just coming out of their ears every
right.
single year. So, I mean, it's totally worth it. But I know that there's been times where he's been okay. It's just sometimes I just wonder a little bit. I don't mean it in a bad way. It's just –
he's gonna
my own
you,
cautious.
He's going to prove you wrong. Kurt.
Yeah, I'm going to get an angry tweet, and everyone's going to hate me.
Right, he's going to, like, cut this out. And every day when he wakes up, he's going to listen to it.
He probably won't go that far. I'll probably just have a bunch of angry people on me. I don't know. I think he's great. I think he's awesome for what Iowa State generally has done offensively.
Right.
But in order to get all those preseason accolades, I wonder if he needs to – like, the top 10 center list – which was kind of bizarre to me in the first place, just because –
well, it was
like,
bizarre to me that he made that one, but then Monte didn't make
right,
the point
well,
guard one.
The top 10 center list is bizarre to me because, like
– I wouldn't even consider
they're
him
like,
to be a center.
Right, exactly. That's, like, my point. Like, to me, there's, like, five centers in college basketball,
right.
you know, and I don't even know who they're off the top of my head, but, like, Devin Williams at West Virginia be kind of close, where you think of the big plotting,
I feel
stay
like,
in the paint,
yeah.
don't go anywhere else center.
I feel like to be, like, a really, like, true – center, you've got to play with your back to the basket for like a
right.
wide margin of the game.
Yeah, no,
you know?
I think that's totally fair. But yeah, it's so much coming back, and you know, it's weird to have a second year in a row where you're so guarded of, can we actually be this good? And
yeah.
I think last year, you know, everyone, I know what everyone thinks that with how it ended, but for the vast majority of the year, they were that good. They had some brain fart games, and that's kind of what plagued them. But I mean, Kansas State game, that was there. I mean, the Baylor game was one of the craziest things I've seen happen in Hilton. Mm-hmm. That wasn't a good thing. I mean, they were right there knocking on the door for the regular season championship last year, and they return all of the major pieces, and depending on your opinion of one guy that left, and Bryce DeJean Jones, maybe a little bit of addition by subtraction. So,
right.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
Hey, he almost made the Pelicans, though.
Yeah. As everybody would have seen coming, right?
Like, right.
Yeah, the NBA and college basketball and how players make it, I don't really understand.
His game kind of fits the NBA mold, though. More
yeah.
than it does the college game.
Yeah, and his attitude would fit in with the stereotype and all that stuff, right? So,
all right, I want a prediction.
As far as where they're going to finish?
Yeah.
I'm going to – can I predict a tie and be a loser? For what we know now, and I would have a lot more comfort doing this in December after seeing teams play, but especially like learning who the new guys are with the other teams, so I don't pay attention to as much. I sort of think that Iowa State and Kansas will separate from Oklahoma. I think Heald's really good, but I know there's some contention of him being the Big 12 player of the year last year. It's kind of a deal last year where, and I think it happens every year with Kansas when they win the league, they don't usually have one guy give it to the star player on the team that won the league. They don't usually have that. They have three or four guys that are together really, really good. And Iowa State, I mean, it's kind of the same with Niang and Morris. So I don't know. If we did a draft, I would take a few guys ahead of Buddy Hield before him. But I guess for a prediction, I mean, I think that Kansas and Iowa State will separate themselves. And after that, it's just, can you not lose at Texas Tech? Can you not lose at Kansas State? Can you prevent Baylor from making, what was it like, 5 threes in a row and 5 straight possessions.
Right.
But so I guess that means I'm at least picking a tie, but I'll go more on the record in December. So what do you think?
I think they're going to win it.
Think they are?
Yeah.
Outright, no share.
Yeah.
It could definitely happen, but the weird thing is in the polls and preseason stuff, Iowa State's getting docked with the new coach, which is totally fine. We really have no idea what it's going to look like yet.
Right.
And I think we all suspect offense will be basically the same, but are we going to be launching as many threes? And is he as open to that? Is he as adaptive to his roster and to how games are going and the schedule and all of that? And it'll be crazy, but it'll be a lot of fun, I'm sure.
Yeah. I just have to think he keeps the formula.
Yeah.
The way it already is, especially offensively. You know, you come in, you make some additions to your defense. If they can become just a couple possessions better defensively every single game, that's the difference between, you know, winning the whole thing outright or a tie.
And here's one thing. Here's one. You know, people talk about changes with Prome and what would look differently. And usually when I think there's a thread on it actually with talking about from going from Hoiberg to Prome, what can we hope for that would be a positive change? Like what areas were weaknesses that he can make better? And the first thing everyone brings up is defense, which is mostly fair. The other one is rebounding. And like Iowa State last year was actually a really pretty good defensive rebounding team. See, in conference play, they were the leading rebound percentage team. So what that means is when they're on defense and a shot goes up, they're letting the opponent grab the offensive rebound less than anybody else. It happened 30% of the time. Like, that's really good. The thing is, and actually I was reading up on this again the other day. There's an article on it like a year ago that was awesome, but I can't explain the ins and outs of it right now. Iowa State was 9th in offensive rebounding percentage. And Jared, you know that a lot of coaches are conservative and want to play it safe. So on offense, they send 1, 2, 3 guys back.
Right.
On defense, as soon as the shot goes up, to negate fast break points for the opponent. I think that's one thing that I would like to see change. You have a guy like McKay. You have a guy like Deontay Burton in December. I mean, there's – and even Abdul Nader, he's like sneaky athletic. He's right. Kind of like slow athletic, like it happens in slow motion or something. But I think all those guys are capable. And the net gain in possessions from offensive rebounding and scoring outweighs pretty much anything you give up on the fast break side.
Right. Plus, and you have to think about not many teams – play that way.
Right.
So if you're sending four guys to the offensive boards every single time, there's not going to be anybody prepared for that.
And the other thing is Iowa State, they want to get up and down. They want to play fast, and I think it's going to stay the same. And other teams are always trying to get out of that.
Yeah.
Well, if you're crashing the glass, even if you're giving up a few fast break points a game, you're keeping the pace going. You're getting the possessions up, and ultimately that's going to help you. I mean,
they were second to last in offensive rebounds per game.
Yeah,
last season.
And by percentage as well.
Yeah.
And like that's Bob Huggins when he's playing his style and he's hacking the crap out of people and they're pressing the entire time. He knows there's going to be four or five possessions per half where you get an easy bucket.
Right.
But he can live with that because of the flip side.
Yeah.
That's one area I think there's potential to be a lot better. And the other one, which we kind of alluded to earlier, was turnover percentage. Hoiberg's defense were largely protect the paint, like don't even let guys get in there, basically, with how you clog the lane with help side.
Mm-hmm.
Run shooters off the line and try and get them to pull up for the seven. Like basically the shots everyone knows Iowa State didn't want to take the last 5 years. Get other teams
to take
those.
Yeah.
So if we're trying to deny the passing lanes a little more to get a few more turnovers, then I think that would be a positive change, even though on the flip side, you may give up a few more layups or a few more open threes. How many times have we seen the last 5 years with a late closeout or a flyby on a three-point shot or a foul? There's a stretch last year on a three-point shooter where it seemed like we fouled once per game for about a month. So those are kind of two of the things where I don't know that they will change. I don't know philosophically what Prohm's approach is on those, but those are two areas where I think there's room for improvement and there's personnel to implement it.
Yeah, I agree.
So, yeah, but we'll see, right? It's November.
Right.
Yeah, the other thing, I was thinking about this the other day, and like Deontay Burton's like your boy, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess I hitched my wagon on the train.
So, philosophically with basketball, you can tell me how you are, but when I coach and when I was coaching, it was generally like middle school, freshman, stuff like that, high school. I would try and get my five best players on the court, like no matter what, because when you're small town Iowa freshman basketball team, you get your five best players on the court. They're basic. Like all those kids are basically the same size.
Right.
Like there's no point telling 1 6-foot kid to go post up and the other one to be point guard. So I've always been a huge fan of the interchangeable parts. And what's really, really interesting about this year's team, and it'll hit in December, is you could conceive a lineup with Jameel McKay, George Niang, Deontay Burton, and Abdul Nader. Those are four guys who are 6'6 to 6'9. Three of them are very athletic. George does his damnedest to be pretty effective at what he does. On offense, and obviously you'd put Morrison as the fifth guy, offensively, you trot out a lineup like that. None of them, Morrison, Yang would pretty much be your only real shooters, but you trot out a lineup like that, you have four huge guys that you're going to get a mismatch.
Right.
And defensively, those four guys can match up probably with a lot of different people. I mean, I don't think that's a lineup that you're going to see every game or 5 to 10 minutes a game, but it's one of those interesting lineups you can get when you have a versatile roster like I think they'll have this year.
Right.
But that's my philosophy, so I don't know what you think.
I'm interested to see the way Burton works in the pick and roll situation.
Yeah.
Because I think I'm not – like he was able to create for himself obviously pretty well in Cap City League when I was watching him a couple times a week.
Are you foreseeing him as the picker or the roller?
The roller.
Okay.
Like,
or I guess the
like
pick,
if Morris
the guy off the ball.
Right. If Morris has the ball, then he's coming to set the pick.
Yeah.
And then you get yourself into a situation where I know he can shoot well enough from the mid range area to where you're gonna have to respect him, but at the same time, obviously Monte is almost automatic from the mid range, and he can get to the rim at will. So that you're putting yourself into a position right there where you've got two guys that no matter where they are on the floor, they can get to the rim at almost any time. Plus they can knock down the shot. Plus if you don't respect them, they can throw the lob on the pick as well.
Right.
And that's what I just like how dynamic you are with that. And I it's kind of the same way with McKay, because you know he can get to the rim from almost anywhere. He can hit that shot too.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited to see how these guys work in a pick and roll type situation, because that's, I think they are going to be dynamic like that.
Yeah, and I think Deontay Burton is somewhat of a comp to Dustin Hogue, at least in kind of rough ability. And we were talking about him earlier missing his rebounding. But what we might miss the most was he was like dead eye from the 3-point line last year. He was 28 of 65. That's 43%. Like, his shot did not look like a 43% shot, you know? So we'll miss his rebounding, and maybe Burton can help fill in for that. But I don't think Burton is going to get to those levels of shooting behind the three-point line.
Most definitely not. I mean, their shots are very comparable, though.
You
talk about that he doesn't look like he would have a 43%. Yeah, that Deontay Burton does not have a 43%
but he
shot.
Actually does not
have yeah, he definitely does not have a 43% shot.
Well, and I mean, if you follow Jameel McKay on Twitter, like all summer long he's been talking about launching threes and how he's making them, and he's putting up videos, and
his shot is funny because it is like a good like form shot, but he shoots it from like starts it from like way above his head, so it's just like a little flick, and it's just kind
of
funny.
Like when you're that huge of a man, and the ball starts like even with the rim, it's just like a straight trajectory.
Yeah.
But I mean,
it's pretty nice.
If he takes one per game and he makes the occasional one, I mean, that if it's enough that we're other coaches are like, okay, we can't let him just spot up.
Well, if you have to respect
and you
him,
suck a defender up, then I mean, you don't have to make every one of them to be able to accomplish that.
Right.
But the different lineups that they do this year, I think will, and just from Hoiberg to Prohm too, is how will the substitutions change? Hoiberg was always, you know, he would go with the hot hand. He would, Matt Thomas, wow, you didn't play very well last game, so you got 5 minutes and that was it. This game, you're playing well, okay, you get 35 minutes. So it'll be interesting to see how that all unfolds.
I'm excited though.
Yeah. I mean, thank God we had a football win over Texas yesterday that doesn't make this seem as, like, necessary. But for a while there, it's like, is it basketball season yet?
Right.
I need some good vibes. I need to talk about something fun that we're good at. And then I kind of start thinking, like, well, it wasn't that long ago that we were terrible at this, so I should just be grateful for like, anything. But, yeah, I mean, we haven't even spent time really talking about, like, Naz Long and Hollis Cook and their hips. And hopefully physically they're like Naz. I mean, who knew that thing was bothering him like almost all of last season, it sounds like.
Of anybody on this roster that I would think would be able to battle through something like that, it would be Naz Long.
Yeah. I mean, just like, that's where it kind of gets bananas. Like, so we find out in like what, April or March or whatever, that he had this hip thing, he's having surgeries. And it was going on since, like, January. Then you got all these, like, jerk fans, like, probably me sometimes, where it's like, God, what's wrong with Naz? Blah, blah, blah. Like, the dude's going through, like, this hip issue that he can hardly walk on. And, like, we just don't understand sometimes. So, but, yeah, if him and Matt and Hollis, if two of those three can be kind of the rock-solid shooter you need, and it doesn't have to be the same guy every game, but then I think their offense will be great.
Definitely.
So, yeah, I actually asked for a Twitter question, but I don't know if I can get to it on time before we get busy. You got any other thoughts on it? I mean, you're amped up and ready to go. And
yeah, I'm just ready for basketball season to start. I mean, the women's team has their scrimmage on Thursday night. The men are on Friday night. And then a week after that, it'll be time for the real deal.
Yeah, and it gets kicked off in an interesting fashion with Colorado and a neutral site. And Colorado's not great, but that's – I mean, I think we said the same thing about South Carolina and –
Spencer Dinwiddie's gone, right?
Sure. you're up to date better on Indian Hills and Colorado's personnel than me. So
he is gone. He actually was gone last year. So
like, is Chauncey Billups still at Colorado? That's funny. Yeah, it'll be a great season. I don't know.
Hopefully we'll be able to get together again.
Yeah, if people like it, if they have questions, if you know you want to know what it's like to be a 6'7" center at Simpson.
Yes.
Send them in. Jared will let you know.
Yeah.
While he's sporting his Damian Lillard T jersey.
Exactly. I've got Damian Lillard, I've got Anthony Davis, and I've got Steph Curry.
Anthony Davis?
Heck yeah, man. Anthony Davis is my favorite basketball player of all time.
Okay. Of all time?
Yes.
Okay. It's like, he's really good, and I'm totally fine with that. Is it shallow of me that I can't get past the eyebrow? I can't even look at him. I can't cheer for that.
I'm sorry. I respect a man for his game, not how he looks.
Yeah, I'm just shallow, like I said. So
he was just like, his freshman year at Kentucky was my senior year of high school, and I wanted to be Anthony Davis so bad. And like, ever since then, he's just my favorite player.
You're like the same size, right?
Well, minus like 5 inches.
So no, I guess.
Yeah, not quite.
Okay, you're not the same size, but you're just as athletic.
Sure. No. Okay. Sure. All right. All right. We'll finish it with that.
All right. Yep. See you, dudes.